In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
There's an old saying, money doesn't grow on trees. And that's true. But trees do grow into money. Or they used to, anyway. Now, Oregon has yet a new scheme to continue to not harvest forests that were especially set aside and dedicated to be harvested. And, in doing so, that timber money would pay for schools and rural roads. In this way, Oregonians would have jobs to log the forest, and other Oregonians would not have to pay excess taxes for schools because money made from the sale of timber taken off those set-aside lands would be used to pay for the aforementioned schools and rural roads. And the beauty is, all that timber would grow back every year, and more timber would be taken off, and more money would be created, and on it would go, self-funding, or even better, renewable. Like an investment that pays you dividends every year and the principal never depletes, problem solved. In fact, back in the day, many rural schools were fully funded. They had art and science and music classes and sports when many Portland schools were cutting back on those extra classes and activities. Rural schools had great schools, great teachers, that's more employment, and great roads. But now, thanks to environmentalists, Oregon doesn't do that. Now, Oregonians in timber counties do not have timber jobs, and everyone all across the state pays through the nose for more taxes into the black hole that is education, and there is never enough money, no matter how much you pour into it. Which is doubly harmful. Instead of defined amounts coming in, which require efficiency to manage the money and plan for the future, now they see it as all just a limitless supply of more taxes. So in their view, there is no need to be efficient. Even worse, all the other states are paying for our schools and roads as federal dollars are poured in. The timber counties themselves are on a form of federal welfare. They are paid by the U.S. taxpayers not to log. Not only are there no timber jobs, other people with jobs in other states have to pay for people here not to work. As we've covered here on iSpy many times, not only are we not making money from lands that were supposed to generate income, we're now losing money on the deal. Due to mismanagement that lets millions of acres go up in flames because of mismanagement. The forests could be generating logging jobs that pay taxes into the state, but no, now the state, meaning you the taxpayer, pays firefighters to put out fires as all those trees, all that potential money, goes up in flames. That annuity that used to pay you, now you have to pay into it. And as if all of that wasn't horrifyingly horrible enough, Oregon is dead last in education results. What on earth are we paying for? We're pouring gas into a car that doesn't run and has a bowling ball-sized hole in the gas tank. Things are so bad with our schools, we removed education requirements to graduate. Reading, writing, math, you don't need to show you understand any of it to graduate from high school here in Oregon. Here you go, kid. Have a diploma. You can't read it, but don't you feel better for getting a participation trophy you can hang on your wall? And if you think all of that's bad, wait until you hear what the state, which used to be concerned about crime and public safety, wait until you hear what our governor's latest scheme is for our prisons. But first, I'd like to welcome back Dr. Bob Zybak. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I should mention that Dr. Bob Zybak holds a PhD in environmental sciences from OSU, and his dissertation was on catastrophic forest fire patterns. And Bob, before we get to this latest travesty of what Oregon is planning to do now to do everything they can to avoid harvesting timber as they're supposed to do, we've been CC'd in on some emails as you were juggling times for another interview. What's this about an interview for a movie?
Oh, that's probably a secondary movie coming out of Dallas, Texas. They got a four-part series that they're doing on American forest fires, and so they wanted to talk to me. Pretty comprehensive interview tomorrow.
Well, that's really cool.
And I'm not sure how widely it'll be distributed. I don't think it'll be coming to a neighborhood theater, but it might be television or something like that.
Well, it's still pretty cool. We keep saying we need to get a T-shirt for you, as heard on iSpy Radio, and we just failed to do that yet again. So. So anyway, now the state wants taxpayers to purchase the Elliott Forest from itself, from the state, at a loss of $800 million more to our schools. Oregon SB 1546 has been introduced. Tell us a little bit more about this and what's happening.
Well, it goes back about 30 years. We don't want to go back that far, though. So the last 8 or 10 years, environmental organizations filed lawsuits against Oregon because they're defying federal regulations regarding spotted owls and marbled murrelets or so on. So they won the suits. It put 28 logging projects out of work, including the Elliott. The Elliott is different from the other state forests, though, in that it's owned and dedicated predominantly by the Common School Fund. So the money, going back to February 14, 1859, Common School Fund monies, the resources to be managed for the maximum economic advantage of our school children. So they put a stop to that. And instead of 400 local jobs producing about 50 million feet of timber a year and keeping the forest safe and the roads open and the wildlife safe, they've shut the forest down completely, and now they're spending $1 or $2 million a year on lawyers and basic maintenance.
Do they spend any money on actual forest management?
No. It's active forest management has been halted because of these lawsuits, and now they're trying to. They were trying to sell it to Oregon State for pennies on the dollar, $220 million, in a really odd appraisal. And then that became illegal. So then Oregon State was just going to get title to it. And Oregon State said, hey, wait a minute, that's a risk. So now they've got legislation saying they're going to build a bureaucracy of volunteer time, I think. And their job is to generate money so that Oregon State can operate the forest for really dubious research.
Leave it to the state to build a bureaucracy around preventing people from actually doing real work to generate taxes in order to pay for all of this. I mean, that's just absurd. But you, had mentioned that the school funds, the Oregon School Fund was designed to harvest these forests for maximum financial output for the state and for the schools. And you also
For the schools and for local employment.
Right. And you also said that they're not spending any money on forest management. Can you take a page from environmentalists and sue the state for not fulfilling the duties as outlined by these agreements?
In fact, we're doing that.
Awesome.
So Dr. David Sullivan is filed a lawsuit against the state for dereliction of duty.
That is terrific. And yep. You said that has been filed or will be filed?
He has filed it. It's going through an appeal process now for standing, but he's working with Advocates for School Trust Lands, which is a national organization, to working with superintendents of schools to get hopefully some school districts to follow suit.
Well, I happen to know some superintendents that would love to be part of that, I'm sure. In the time that I have left in this opening segment here, what is OSU's strategy on forest management there in the Elliott, and is there any scientific legitimacy of their research design?
They're taking the west side, which is some of the most dynamic land in the Douglas fir region, and creating a de facto wilderness right next to several local communities. And then they're divvying up the interior into a bunch of little tiny polygons, relatively small polygons, to study different types of acronyms. I think they've got three different types. It's called a triad, and it's just goofy.
Okay, we will talk more about
that. In my estimation.
Yeah, well, I saw a video. It's not just your estimation, it's mine as well. All right, we will talk more about OSU strategy coming back with Dr. Bob Zybak. Everyone stay with us. And welcome back. We are talking today about Oregon's seeming never-ending catastrophe, not forest fires. Those can be prevented. We're talking about Oregon's never-ending catastrophe of mismanaging forests that leads to catastrophic forest fires. And we're doing that with Dr. Bob Zybak, whose dissertation was on catastrophic fires. And Bob, in that last segment going on to that, we kind of just breezed over what was happening there with OSU's strategy. And they're developing this plan of dividing the land into these triads. Can you just fill that in just a little bit more?
Yeah, they're actually taking and creating a bunch of polygons, triads, three different types of treatment, one type of treatment being no treatment, second type of treatment being I don't know, spotty, a third type being maybe a type of a semi-clear cut. And then they're taking the whole west side of the forest, one of the most dynamic areas in the Douglas fir region, open to landslides. Columbus Day storm blew down the timber, burnt completely off several times during historical time, and they're creating a de facto wilderness out of that. And then with all these landslides and wind storms, ice storms, and fires, they're leaving the snags, the most flammable part of a forest fire. They've got no plan to harvest any snags. And when you ask them why, they say, oh, we want to study what happens naturally. Naturally, firewood burns.
Yeah.
They don't need to study that.
Well, I was going to say, because I had listened to a Q&A session on OSU's plan for the Elliott Forest, and you were one of these people that had called in, and we're going to see if we can put that up on iSpy Radio, so and we'll have your session there. But I listened to that, and you brought up the point that they only plan to take off 17 million board feet per year, despite the fact that the Elliott grows at about 60 to 80 million board feet per year, producing all that fuel. And you were concerned about the research design, that the little polygon research areas are likely to burn down because they're not taking off enough fuel. And they responded with talking points that, yeah, of course it's going to burn. And the forests have burned since the glaciers retreated. And now with global warming, it's going to increase the likelihood of burning. So they're looking at this as an opportunity to study burning. And it just strikes me as crazy because we've known since caveman days how fire works. We know that wood burns. Yep. And we know that when you leave fuel in the forest to dry rather than harvest trees and clear out that fuel, that forest will burn even more. So what's startling new
relevant? Labor Day fire is a perfect example.
Yeah. So what startling new revelations do they hope to learn by spending millions of taxpayer dollars rather than harvesting timber to create jobs and make millions of dollars for taxpayers?
Nothing. I don't think they know what they're talking about. They've had 3 years to do a 1 year plan, and they still don't know the fire history of the Elliott. They're talking about going out there with increment bores, which is crazy. You do that in pine or something. Douglas fir stand replacement events. And we've nailed down the fire history with the actual experts on the forest and recorded it, put it online, done oral histories, done videotapes for students. It's all available online. And they haven't even looked at it in 3 years and millions of dollars later.
So we've had millions of acres burn here in Oregon. Why haven't they gone out and studied those?
Well, they have. It's just like, so what were their findings and what application is there to their findings? And they seem to have regressed. We've got the state dumping seed on 4,000 acres of snags. That was pretty much eliminated in the 1960s. We've got people from another country that are planting under snags, which is dangerous, in areas that they won't even allow residents and taxpayers into because it's too dangerous. But they send out these crews to plant trees underneath snags that almost certainly will burn again. So it's just they're throwing money away and giving it a really happy face on the media.
Well, you mentioned that they don't know what they're talking about. And listening to his response, the only person dumb enough to actually believe his talking points are politicians who have no grasp of reality. I mean, it was just absurd. Just the spin he was putting on that. Just real quick before we move on, you mentioned snags. Could you define that for our audience that maybe knows kind of what that is but doesn't really know?
A snag is a dead standing tree. When it falls over, it's a log. So when it's standing, and we've got hundreds of standing trees where there used to be dozens 200 years ago. So we've built these solid walls of fuel. And then when a fire goes through it, it goes through the crowns of the trees and it kills all the trees. So now we've got what were tubes of water. Basically, a tree is just filled with water, green leaves and all that. That all comes off. And then now the tree is standing air dried, pitchy because it's Douglas fir firewood. So next time the fire comes through, and we learned this lesson with the Tillamook burn, but apparently we don't retain that stuff. Next time the fire comes through, it's hotter and more severe. And so that's been happening on the Forest Service land in Western Oregon since 1987, that these fires have started. They burnt. We've wasted money. They burnt again. We've wasted more money. Some of them burnt again. Some of them are burning for the fourth time.
Bob, you were describing...
And that's the Kalmiopsis Wilderness. That's the Douglas County, North Umpqua, Tillamook, Yakult. The record's real clear.
Yeah, Bobby, you're describing perfectly a government program. It doesn't actually solve anything. It's just designed to make it look like they're trying to solve something, because if they actually solve something, they'd have to move on and actually do something else. So let's go ahead and take a break a little bit early. Lots more to ask Dr. Bob Zybak on Oregon's mismanagement of the forest. Everyone stay with us. We'll be right back. Dr. Bob Zybak holds a PhD in environmental sciences from OSU, and Dr. Bob Zybak is our longtime consultant for issues of forestry and timber and forest fires, and we really go to him whenever the state is just simply making zero sense on these issues. And so, Bob, I want to return to OSU's strategy there for a bit, because this has been introduced in a bill. They're looking at basically seeding the Elliott Forest, seeding as in giving over, not seeding as in planting seeds. Giving that over to OSU to turn this into a giant research center. And it's interesting because you sent us a quote that even environmentalists are essentially saying this is a crazy plan. And they're quoting Jerry Franklin and Norm Johnson's review of this. And it says, quote, "The current document puts the cart before the horse by proposing a major experiment before conducting such an analysis and without developing on-the-ground familiarity with the property. In addition, the experiment OSU has proposed is badly flawed, compromises development of the long-term research potential of the forest, and lacks significant relevance to the management of Oregon's forests. The proposed experiment violates basic principles essential to production of statistically valid and socially convincing outcomes. Furthermore, the focus on triad and academic concept related to land allocations at regional scales has no relevance to pressing forest issues facing Oregonians." Yeah, but this makes sense from a political standpoint because they're spending money and they get to act like they're doing something. But what is the actual likelihood of this moving forward, you think?
In the direction that they've painted, it can't succeed. It's one of the few times I've really agreed with Franklin and Johnson. OSU is a land-grant university. They're supposed to be doing research that's of value to private landowners in Oregon. This is just a nutty. And Franklin and Johnson hit the nail on the head. After 3 years, they got something that looks like a couple of graduate students and a case of beer put out over a weekend, in my estimation.
Wow. Wow. So I'd like to touch a little bit on the Labor Day fires. And you had mentioned the snags. Is there anything actually going on there that is positive in any way in terms of actual forest management?
By who? Because we've got four basic types of forest managers in Oregon. We've got the feds, and that's BLM, Forest Service, and Wilderness. We've got the state, which is state forests and parks. We've got industrial, which is like Weyerhaeuser and Georgia Pacific and Roseburg Lumber that manage a forest for fiber. And then we've got tree farmers, and there used to be about 25,000, and I used to say us, but I don't own a tree farm anymore, but about more than 20,000, I think, small landowners that often live on their properties or have isolated tracts. So the management of those different ownerships is distinctly different between owners.
Sure. Well, because with owners, you know, the tree growers and also the commercial side of things, you have to make money, unlike the state, which doesn't care if they make money. In fact, they prefer to spend it. But in terms of on the government side, let's start there. Are they doing anything that would actually benefit forest management?
Let's go back to the state real quickly. They're required to make money for the counties, if they're in a county, or for the common school fund. They've just failed miserably at their task, and they're writing legislation to make it worse. As far as the feds, since the spotted owl flew into town, it's mismanagement at best. All of their land is burning up. Recreational facilities are falling apart. Roads are being closed. The air is being polluted. Wildlife is being burned to death. That's pretty gross. They're spending hundreds of millions of dollars trying to rationalize what they're doing, and they're blaming it on climate change. No, they're not. I can't see anything positive. It's getting progressively worse. I don't know if they bottomed out. I hope so.
So on the commercial and farming side of things, you know, obviously they're going to want to have a profit. What kind of issues are, you know, so I assume they're doing positive forest management, but are they running into issues where either the feds or the states are fighting them?
Because they don't want all the snags burning up their property like happened on the Labor Day fires. The industrial landowners are going along with some of the federal regulations. They're not science-based. They say they are stream-side buffers and so on of arbitrary, you know, 75 or 200 feet or a quarter mile. They just make it up, and then they regulate it like it's highway traffic or something. And it's a dynamic forest with landslides and floods and fires and insects, and so it doesn't wash. But they're imposing that on the industrial lands, and now weirdly the industrial lands are working with the governor and trying to impose that, I think, by at first making it maybe a selection or something on the tree farmers. Regulations are really killing our forests.
Yeah, that sounds like big corporations using that leverage to their advantage and maybe trying to squeeze out the other farmers.
Yep. That's what it seems like.
We only got a couple minutes here with you. Back in September 2021, OPB did an article on the Labor Day 2020 fires and its aftermath, and they brought up SB 762, which is a $220 million plan to address some problems. Not correct the problem, of course, but just appear to be addressing it. But at the end of the article, they said the Oregon State Fire Marshal has a deadline of October 2022 to set new standards for clearing defensible spaces around homes. And so basically, it's a return to the old days when we used to do some forest management and prevention, I guess. But it was interesting. Betsy Johnson was quoted as saying, if Senator Golden thinks for a moment I'm going to cut down the 200-year-old, 200-foot-tall, old-growth ponderosa pine in my yard, he is sadly mistaken. I'm just not sure I want unseen, unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats dictating the future of the state of Oregon and how we are all going to live on our own property. What do you think from this particular movement to try to manage some of the growth up closer to homes? Is this a good idea, or is it just taking more power away from homeowners?
It's just adding more bureaucracy. It's enforcing more costs on homeowners, and it's ridiculous. Defensible space, they're saying, oh, the homeowner's responsible for these fires that come roaring out of the federal forests. It's the homeowner's fault if their land burns up or if the trees burn up. And not right. And using all that money, I hope they start tracking all these hundreds of millions of dollars that are supposedly going towards forest management and that. It's mostly paying for bureaucrats and modelers and universities playing computer games. And even when it goes to the landowner, it's to pay for essentially landscaping or irrigation or something, defensible space, a new roof. It's really misdirecting the problem. It's blaming the landowners for a government problem and then charging them tax money to not resolve or address the problem.
No, I think that's exactly right. And it just seems to me that until we change who is in charge, nothing is going to change. Bob, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you. It's been fun talking to you.
Have you ever thought about the fact that there are no real-life qualifications to get elected to office? For some offices, like Congress, you don't even have to be a resident of the district. You can live full-time in New York City but still be the senator from Oregon. For some offices, there are age restrictions, but other than living to a certain age and sometimes living in a certain area, that's it. Those are the qualifications. You could never have had a job or accomplished anything as long as you give entertaining speeches and have entertaining or scary commercials. You too can be elected and then be put in charge of overseeing how millions and even billions of taxpayer dollars are spent. Taxes paid by people who are qualified and who do have skill and experience to hold their jobs. While you, with no experience, not only spend their money, you also get to tell those people how to do their jobs through regulations. The other side of this is, when you think about it, there are also no real qualifications to vote. No tests or quizzes to demonstrate that you know what a politician's policies even are, or what those policies would do in the real world. Voters don't have to know or understand any of that. To vote, you don't have to demonstrate even basic comprehension of things like economics or business or civics or history. You just have to be able to mouth breathe long enough to reach 18 years of age. That's the sole qualification. Well, and live in an area, ostensibly. Where else in the world does this happen? Can you get to be a truck driver without knowing how to drive? Can you be a doctor just because you feel like it? Think of the dynamics of our election system and what this puts into place. people who have no genuine understanding of how the world works are able to weigh in and elect people who have no genuine understanding of how government ought to work or its impact on businesses when they pile on new rules, new fees, and new taxes. Is it any wonder we have people like Kate Brown and the current crop of Democrats in office? I'd like to welcome back Chuck Weiss, who always has something to say about Oregon's elected leaders. Chuck is a former meteorologist, a fierce global warming debunker, and one of our favorite guests. Chuck, thanks for being here. It's great to talk to you again.
Well, great to talk to you, Mark.
Yeah, so there have been a lot of boneheaded decisions made during the COVID pandemic, but one of the worst has to be Governor Kate's and other governors' decision to let criminals go because they didn't want COVID to spread in prisons. In nursing homes, that was fine. It can spread there all at once. And in fact, we'll push COVID patients into nursing homes to make sure it spreads. But prisons and convicted felons, oh, we can't have that. But now Governor Kate has been sued by some attorneys general from Lane and Linn counties, along with some victims of criminals who had been released, who believe that Governor Brown was not and is not following the clemency law by her just deciding to let convicted criminals go free. So let's start with the prisoner aspect of this, just letting them go. Chuck, I'm not a law enforcement officer. You're not a law enforcement officer. But in an era of trust the science, shouldn't the governor have been trusting law enforcement officers? I mean, what's your take on her letting these prisoners go?
Well, it's ridiculous. I mean, this whole COVID thing, if you follow the science, as they put it, if they'd have really done that and listened to people in medicine that are actually practicing out there and working with solutions that we have since discovered since the outbreak work, none of this would be necessary. She could have pre-treated everything. The narrative, though, that came out, unfortunately, was from the pharmaceutical industry, and the narrative has always been from day one, we don't want any intervening therapeutics, we want the vaccine. And in fact, they said the vaccine is the only road to saving yourself from this, and that's completely wrong. In fact, the vaccines have caused a lot of injuries. They're not doing what they said that they're doing as far as their effectiveness. The efficacy is nowhere close to what they said it is. And if you add that up to the injuries, they should have scrapped this program a long time ago and just gone with what we know works. But they're actually denying that drugs like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin actually work to contain and stop the virus from replicating.
Yep.
And they just ignored that.
Yep.
They could treat the prisoner population with that. There was no reason to ever have to let anybody out of prison. This is just crazy and upside down.
Well,
so,
it's kind of interesting. They literally had a captive population. So they could have actually tried some of these treatment programs to see which ones worked in their own clinical trials. And you know, maybe you could have given them some kind of benefit for participating. Although you mentioned the vaccine, a federal judge had ordered that the prisoners be vaccinated. So at the time that she was looking at releasing these prisoners, 71% or more of prisoners in Oregon's system had already been vaccinated. And yet she wanted to let these guys go, despite the fact that it was really a very small population within the prison system that actually had COVID. The numbers were, let's see here, it was... I'll have to find that later for the next segment. But yeah, it was a tiny segment of that population. But let's just start letting people go.
Yes, a tiny little population. And then, like I said, the people in the prisons could be given these drugs and they work. And we've got plenty of evidence that they work by the frontline physicians that have been out there doing this. But like I said, instead of using these drugs like they should have, the pharmaceutical industry put its foot on the throat of all these people and basically said, no, we want our vaccine and we want you to tell everybody else that these therapeutic drugs don't work. And so they get stuck between a rock and a hard place with this and they go, okay, we got to go with the vaccines. And like I said, the vaccines are a disaster. Somebody's got to be held responsible for all of this when the dust finally settles from it all, because people have died from this and there's absolutely no reason for it.
No, there isn't. And in fact, I remember when that all first broke loose there, and when they're starting to hyperventilate about prisoners and COVID, OPB did a rather breathless story at the time in May 2020 with the title, One Prison Has More Than 70% of Oregon's Corrections COVID-19 Cases. And that was in Shutter Creek, a prison that we'll talk a little bit more about in the next segment. Because of still more government malfeasance. But that 70% figure, at the time, Shutter Creek had 25 inmates test positive in a facility with 302 beds. That's 8.28%. And if those 25 inmates made up 70% of all inmates with COVID, That meant the panic being caused by the government and by OPB at the time was a whopping 36 inmates total, 36. So let's go ahead and start looking at emptying the prison. And then this is the number I was looking for as well. A month after that breathless OPB article, as I mentioned, 71% of the prison population was vaccinated. Yet despite that, 2 months later in August, Governor Haight there begins the plans to start emptying prisoners. And at that point, Oregon had seen just three prison inmates die from COVID among 634 cases. And that is a death rate of 0.47% of COVID cases, but a mere 0.021% death rate, roughly 1 in 5,000 among the prison population as a whole. It seems to me that the issue at that point should not have been, should we let prisoners go? With a 71% vaccination rate already there, it should have been, why the heck does this vaccine not work? Is the vaccine somehow causing COVID or causing the spread of it?
Of course, yeah. And that's what a lot of the research is showing, that those that got vaccinated not only contract the virus, they spread it. Their viral loads are higher than those who didn't get the vaccine. And the drugs actually stop the replication of the virus, which was the correct way to go. But like I said, the pharmaceutical industry just basically crapped all over that and said that these drugs don't work. And they went so far as to actually stop the public from being able to get a prescription for them. That's what I really hold against this the pharmaceutical industry for what they did in coercion with the federal government, where they're actually blocking the use of these life-saving drugs. And the people out there trying them, they also took action against them to take their licenses away, to suspend them, to try to tarnish their reputations of practicing voodoo medicine, this sort of thing. It's crazy. There's no reason for this. You just take a look at the facts and what data is out there, and it's obvious that they took the wrong turn here, and it seems to be money motivated. And then as far as the politicians go, you know, I don't look anymore at what these people say. I look at what they do.
Yeah,
and when Kate Brown wants to empty the prisons, and then you have these district attorneys, like up here in the city of Portland, who refuses to prosecute serious crimes, it sure looks to me like there's some sort of a concerted effort
to
destroy our economy and our country by this allowing for all this.
Yes, there is
definitely, it makes no sense.
There is definitely a plan there. You know, there's a Turkish proverb, when a clown moves into a palace, he doesn't become a king. The palace becomes a circus, and that is Oregon right now. More Chuck Weiss after this. Back. We're talking about some of the craziness around the Pacific Northwest, and we're doing that with Chuck Weiss, who always has something to say about Oregon's craziness here. Chuck is a former meteorologist, a fierce global warming debunker. And Chuck, in that last segment, we were talking about Governor Brownshirt's early release of prisoners and how she's being now sued over that, I think rightfully so. Just to touch real quickly on that, one of the reasons why she's being sued is because she decided on her own that she had the ability and power to retroactively change the clemency laws. There was a bill that was passed, Senate Bill 1008, and she decided to make that bill retroactive, literally inventing powers for herself, much the same as she did with the emergency powers when she pulled it out of the COVID hat. It's just crazy when you think that somebody thinks that they can retroactively change a bill passed by the legislature. I don't even know what Governor Haight really thinks that she needs a legislature anymore. Just rule as it is. But one of the issues going on right now, is that she released those prisoners. She shut down at least two of those prisons. One of those was Shutter Creek Prison in Coos County, the one that we mentioned in that last segment that had the 25 cases of COVID, which had 70% of the then COVID cases. And despite the outcry from local citizens, she shut that. And if I could just nutshell this, Shutter Creek was originally acquired from the U.S. General Services Administration at no cost to Oregon taxpayers in January 1990. It was a former radar station near North Bend. It was converted into a 302-bed minimum security prison, housing inmates within 4 years of the release. Governor Brownshirt then closed it, which gave ownership back to the feds. And by closing it, 110 people lost their tax-paying blue-collar jobs. Now the Democrat leadership and Governor Haight want to lease it back from the federal government, a building that they had previously cost nothing to get. And what do they want to lease it for? Why, climate change, of course. They want to put an OSU research center there. So now it's climate change versus public safety as criminals are let out. And now that the prisons aren't needed because we solve crime by no longer calling them criminals when we can focus on the mythical climate change instead. So, Chuck, what is your thoughts on this?
Well, this is more environmental activism via Kate Brown. And of course, Oregon State University and universities in general across the country are now engaging in this. I mean, it's just a free-for-all money grubbing is what it boils down to. Mm-hmm. When you look at universities like Oregon State, and I need to tell the listener, I am an alumni from Oregon State, so I'm ashamed to even have to say this, but it's true that environmental activism took over that university, and they no longer do sound or good science. And it all started way back in 1977 with the advent of these climate models, and I was in the Department of Atmospheric Sciences at that time. And that turned into, I basically call these climate modelers, they're building Oz machines, as I call them. I remember the movie The Wizard of Oz and The Great and Powerful Oz, how dare anybody ever question something that comes out of it. Well, a climate model is a lot like an Oz machine. It gives an answer, and you're not to ever question it, because who can do better than somebody who built a climate model? How dare anybody ever question its results? And when they started getting this warming climate from increasing CO2, that just exploded the amount of research dollars that started going into the universities. And looking back on it, it's just gotten progressively worse over the years. And now the university is in cahoots with the state of Oregon. And this all started with Ted Kulongoski back in 2007, because back then we had one of the best state climatologists that ever worked for the state of Oregon. His name is George Taylor. And George wasn't going to lie that the university was engaging in with this climate environmentalism. He wasn't going to lie about the climate or statistics or anything else, including the science. And Ted Kulongoski did not like that, because they want a climate action coming out that they can use from the research from Oregon State University. So they got rid of George Taylor. They treated him horribly. For the number of years of service that poor guy put in, he got a terrible treatment from the university and basically forced out because he wasn't going to lie. They want to put in people who aren't going to tell the truth. And that goes right back to the climate modeling. And it just got more and more out of control from there. More research dollars coming in for the amount of climate propaganda and climate hysteria that goes out. I remember that just recently, a few years ago, back in 2019, there was a full-page letter taken out and printed in the Sunday Oregonian. It was dated March 3rd, 2019, in the Sunday Oregonian. That was the date of the letter that was sent to Governor Kate Brown and the Oregon legislature. It was signed by 70 people with PhDs, many of them from Oregon State University, demanding that Kate Brown take strong climate action to control our greenhouse gas emissions and stop climate change from ravaging Oregon. And that letter that they took out was a complete prostitution of their PhDs, because it's all false.
Sure.
The Oregon's actions of any kind aren't going to have any effect on atmospheric CO2 levels or the climate. Yet these people were inferring they were, stirring the public up and trying to get this arm of action going with Governor Kate Brown to do something about the climate. Well, look what she did. She
went
through the back door.
It just looks so much like what's going on here with the prison situation. They invent
a
crisis, use that crisis to scaremonger people or legislators into implementing new rules and laws and seize power. This is looking very much like it's its own plan, where you first scare everybody that, oh my gosh, there's COVID in the prisons, we need to release a bunch of prisoners, and now that the prisoners are gone, the prisons are empty, let's use it for something else. And what gets me, though, is that Democrats seem to think that this is a winning issue. Let criminals go. Don't prosecute crimes. Don't arrest new people. But let's fix the weather by taxing people more.
Exactly. Well, they've spread this lie wide and far, and they needed the help of these universities to do it, because when these people prostitute their PhDs and say, yes, climate change is real, it's a danger, and you know, they've got Oregon State University doing this, they've got Portland State University doing this. I've seen people from Portland State on the Straight Talk program on a local TV station here in Portland just get on there and go on and on and on about the climate with nothing to back up their statements with. It's just all propaganda. It's all unprovable. Mm-hmm. And they go ahead and put them on television. They put them in the newspapers. And it's all a big thing to stir the pot and to get the public all up in arms about this, so that they'll sign on to this climate action stuff. And that's what that's what the purpose of a lot of this is. And so, yes.
And even worse on top of that, I think, is the fact that they use this as an excuse to bleed literally billions of dollars from Oregon taxpayers and from U.S. taxpayers. And it all goes to the one side of the political aisle. Isn't that amazing? All right, let's go and take a break there. Come back. We'll have some more Pacific Northwest nonsense roundup. We'll do that with Chuck Wyatt. And welcome back. We're wrapping things up with Chuck Wyatt. He's a former meteorologist and current global warming debunker. And we've talked about the Elliott Forest, how the state wants to turn what should be a moneymaker for schools into a spending sponge on global warming. On top of that, we've talked about the governor scaremongering about COVID in the prisons, using her clemency power retroactively to let about 1,000 criminals out early, emptying and shutting down a couple of prisons, including the Shutter Creek facility, which just happens to be right on the western edge of the Elliott Forest, and then lease that back from the federal government and give it to OSU. Chuck, lots of craziness here. One of the things I should have mentioned, though, when we were talking about that lawsuit, the governor was so far outside the law that even Oregon's crazy judicial system said that they reached an agreement with the state that no additional felons would be released between February 2nd and March 2nd, by which point the court plans to rule on the matter. So that's coming out very soon. I just think that all of this, you know, when you look at it, it really does seem to be just a giant plan by the governor to force all of this through.
Well, one of the questions I have about it, too, is she acting on her emergency authority to do all this? It must be, because that's what's giving her the ability to operate outside of the normal judicial and political process that she would have to go through to make the changes that she's done.
Yep.
And that's one of the things that I've always been against with this COVID-19 pandemic from the very beginning. I can understand why we had to enact emergency measures at the very beginning, because nobody knew what this was and what it could do. And it was only after we started discovering things that we realized the course of action that we would have to take in order to get things under control, by which these people never did. It seems to me as though, from my perspective, that as we went further along in the pandemic and learned more about it, they did the exact opposite of what they should have done to extend the emergency powers and to allow them to do the sorts of things that they're doing now. It's completely out of control now, and it should have never reached the point where it did with all the mask regulations and the rules about the COVID shots and the things that they've done to people's careers, trying to force this vaccine on people that's actually hurting more people than it's helping. They should have never done any of this, but this is where a lot of this stuff is coming from, Mark. I think it's her thinking she has a right to act with emergency authority and taking advantage of that to skip the normal processes that she would have to go through. And now we'll see what the court has to say about this next week.
Yep. So I mentioned earlier, I just don't see how this is a winning issue for the Democrats, and I just don't see this working well for them. In fact, right in your neck of the woods, there was a recent article that said that basically in Portland, nobody is coming back. There was a DHM poll where 88% of the Tri-County voters polled said that the quality of life is getting worse, and specifically 76% of Portland voters agreed. And it appears that Democrats might be starting to lose their hold maybe on Multnomah County. But also the other issue is that 2 years after the COVID shutdowns of Portland's downtown, new data indicates that large numbers of visitors and workers still haven't returned. The number of visitors to the downtown is off by 40% compared to pre-COVID, and the number of people working in downtown is 2/3 lower, 66% lower, according to a new study by the Portland Business Alliance. So would you care to comment on that? Because I know that you live up near there.
Yes. Well, in my opinion, it's all because of the absolute failed leadership of our mayor, Ted Wheeler. Ted has done a horrible job. He's incompetent. He doesn't seem to care or understand what needs to be done to restore things back to normal. And then he's got a city commissioners that he has to work with that are even worse. I think one of the worst commissioners we've ever had put into political office was Joanne Hardesty. Everything she's done has been an absolute disaster. And of course, everybody's scared to criticize her because she'll pull the race card and say, you're a racist if you don't like what I'm doing, because she's African-American. And that has nothing to do with any of it. It's her terrible policies and the fact that she doesn't know what she's doing either. And until all of that's cleaned out, I don't think anything is going to get any better. These people just don't get it. And they have done the exact opposite of what they should have done since the pandemic started, with a police force and everything else to make Portland basically a very unsafe place right now, where their shootings have gone way up and the police are just overwhelmed because a lot of them have quit. And they forced them out with their stupid policies that they've enacted that basically were calling police officers racists, which they're not.
Yep.
You know, there's always a bad apple in every group, but to blanket it like they did is just plain wrong. And look what it's costing now.
Yeah.
And that's why people aren't wanting to come back, because they don't see any indication the police force will come back with the authority they should have had from day one and restore all of this so that we can get law and order back in the streets rather than what we have now, which is just chaos and more of the same. Increased homelessness, crime, drugs, you name it, it's all there, and they're doing nothing about it, and except enact their stupid policies, which enable these people to continue to commit the crimes that they're doing. So, yeah, it's a disaster. It's one of the worst cities in the country right now.
Well, I think Democrats are just finally going to have to bite the bullet and say, you know what, this party has failed. It has failed us. It has failed the city. It has failed the state. And it's time we start voting elsewhere. But, Chuck, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. We'll talk to you again.
For the last 2 years, we've had a dictator and her accomplices who have mandated and ruled. Not governed, ruled. And there is a difference. Well, for those of you who are fed up and feeling a little ornery about a lot of government overreach, Henri is holding a rally this Thursday, February 24th, at the Capitol Building in Salem from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Oregon Natural Resources Industry, or Henri, that's O-N-R-I. Henri unites timber, farming, mining, and other natural resources, but it's all of us who work hard to pay taxes and just try to live our lives. Done with the masks, done with the mandates, done with the emergency orders. Done with the government squandering and giving away things like the billion-dollar Elliott Forest. Done with them destroying your kids' education. Are you done with the government overreach into every aspect of your life? Then be there. Government never stops on its own. It must be stopped. You can find out more by heading to Facebook and search for Henri, O-N-R-I. We'll also link that up on iSpy Radio on today's show page. This is part of the Freedom Convoy, which will also wind its way to Salem that day. There will be speakers, including former Senate Minority Leader Herman Bartschinger and Shannon Poe, speaking on Oregonians' rights to their own land. But most importantly, there will be other believers in freedom there, who are also done with Governor Kate's tyranny. So you know you are not alone in this fight for your freedoms. Be there this Thursday, February 24th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Finally, one last thing. My fellow Oregonians, why do we keep electing Democrats? They have been in charge for decades. We have not had a Republican governor in 30 years. Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results is the definition of insanity. Voting for the same party over and over and expecting different results is the definition of stupidity. Don't be stupid. Because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Megan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.